All right, good morning, everyone. I am really glad to be here with you today. And in the style of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, I'd like to begin by saying, hello, my name is Dorcas, and I am a people pleaser. I have been a people pleaser for as long as I can remember. Here are a few examples of things that I have done in the past because I have been such a people pleaser. There was one day at the end of a long work day when my boss came up to me and asked me if I would babysit his three young kids for 5 hours that night while he and his wife went to a baseball game. He did not offer to pay me. He was just asking me out of the goodness of my heart. I was exhausted. I did not particularly like kids at that point in my life, and I really didn't want to do it, but I still said yes. I was leading a small group once, and there was somebody in our group who needed a ride home every week, and she lived 45 minutes away. So it ended up being a 90-minute round trip to take her home, which I would do every single week. I did it for almost a year, and it never even occurred to me to think to ask somebody else to do it. So no matter how tired I was, if I was really sick, whatever, I always drove her home. Another time, there was a volunteer I was working with, and she got really upset with a decision I had made. So she sent this long email. We've probably all gotten those long emails. She sent me a long email, CC'd my supervisor, listing out everything she thought I had done wrong, as well as why I was a terrible staff person, and of course, why I was also a horrible person on top of all of that. I felt awful. And so I asked this woman to meet with me for coffee to try to reconcile. And that led to an hour-long meeting in which I kept apologizing and saying how much I liked her and respected her. And she kept heaping insults upon me and more insults upon me until she just got up and left without so much as a goodbye. Our organization was facing a financial shortfall. And I was told that I might be losing my job. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm gonna make myself indispensable so they can't get rid of me. And so when I was asked to take on a really big project to help coordinate that on top of my already existing full-time responsibilities, I said yes. And then when somebody on staff went on maternity leave, and they needed someone to take over her job, I said yes again. And so this led to me doing the equivalent of 2 to 3 full-time jobs, working 7 days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day. So you can probably guess where all of these stories lead, which is to exhaustion, to resentment, and to a big, ugly burnout that impacted my mental health and my physical health for years afterwards. Now, I want to tell you something about these stories that I just shared. They all happened over 20 years ago. They all happened when I was working for a church, this church. And it wasn't just me. In many ways, people at the River, including pastors and leaders, reinforced my people-pleasing tendencies. I was affirmed and admired for being the ultimate team player. I was complimented for being so hardworking and reliable and dependable. I was well-liked and appreciated, with one notable exception. And I got to keep my job instead of being laid off. But here's the thing. We are not the only ones. People-pleasing is something that a lot of folks struggle with. One recent survey of 1,000 American adults found that 48% of them self-identified as people pleasers. But if you ask the question in a different way, you ask them, have you engaged in people pleasing behavior? Then 92% said yes, they had, at least some of the time, if not often. So, people pleasing, this is our topic for today. For the past few weeks, we've been in a sermon series discussing our blind spots, all the things that we do that we can't quite see or understand, but they get in the way of our walk with God and our relationship with other people. So we are looking specifically today at what happens when we let people-pleasing determine our thoughts and choices and behaviors. The publication Psychology Today defines people-pleasing this way. The people-pleaser needs to please others for reasons that may include fear of rejection, insecurities, and the need to be well-liked. If he or she stops pleasing others, he thinks everyone will abandon him. He'll be uncared for and unloved. Or he may fear failure. If he stops pleasing others, he will disappoint them, which he thinks will lead to punishment or negative consequences. So psychologically, people-pleasing comes out of fear, anxiety, insecurity. We don't want to be rejected or thought less of. We don't want to risk having others be disappointed in us or disliking us. So we do everything in our power to prevent that, even at great cost to our own health, well-being, and sense of self. In many ways, people-pleasing is a form of self-protection. And for some, it's a trauma response from growing up in a family or an environment in which love was conditional. But the reality is that people-pleasing will always harm us in the end. Now, if when I was sharing earlier about my experiences, you were thinking, gosh, it really sounded like you needed some professional help, you are absolutely right. And so after I burned out at the river, one of the first things I did was I found a therapist. And she figured out my people-pleasing tendencies in about 2 minutes. And then she asked me, so what do you think would happen if you said no sometimes? And even though I knew it was completely irrational, I couldn't stop the doomsday scenarios playing out in my head. If I said no, people would hate me. They'd think I was useless. No one would want to be my friend. No one would hire me or want to work with me. Lots of fear, lots of insecurity. But as someone who had grown up in the church, there was also something else going on for me. I had come to associate people-pleasing and saying yes to everyone as the good Christian thing to do. I took Jesus' teachings like do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or if anyone asks you to walk a mile, walk 2 miles, to mean that I should do anything for other people. If I genuinely loved others, I should be willing to sacrifice my time, my energy, or whatever else they needed. For me, people-pleasing became synonymous with being kind and generous and good. This is what it meant to be Christ-like. And if I ever said no to someone, well, surely that meant that I was selfish and I was unloving. But over the years, I've come to learn that this is a very narrow understanding of what it means to follow Jesus. Because if we look at Scripture, Jesus is definitely not a people pleaser. He oftentimes does not do or say what people want him to do or say. Let's look at just one example from Mark 1, 35 to 38. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone's looking for you." Jesus replied, "Let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That is why I have come." This story takes place at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. He's called his first disciples. He's traveled around to a bunch of cities and towns. He's healed a lot of people. Earlier in this chapter, it says that his fame has already been spreading throughout the region of Galilee. People are bringing their sick and their needy to Jesus from morning to night, every day. And Jesus' ministry is a good thing. He's healing people, he's caring for them, he's changing their lives. If Jesus had been a people pleaser, he probably wouldn't have ever stopped working right? No time for sleep or eating or anything else. But look at what Jesus does here. He hides away from everyone to get time alone with God. And then when Simon and his friends finally find him, they tell Jesus that everyone in the village is looking for him. They want Jesus to continue the healings that he was doing just the day before. And it's like Jesus doesn't even hear Simon. He just says, let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That is why I have come. In this short passage, Jesus is demonstrating a remarkable number of things. First off, he prioritizes solitude, rest, and communion with God. Secondly, Jesus knows what his purpose and calling are and what they aren't. And finally, he's confident enough in both of these things to honor them, even when other people are pressuring him to do otherwise. There are so many examples in the Gospels of Jesus being asked, told, or even ordered to do something, and he doesn't go along with it. He's told to stay away from sinners and tax collectors, or to follow certain religious practices to the letter of the law, and he doesn't listen. At one point, people even want to force him to become king, and he just walks away. Jesus is not saying no because he doesn't care. He also is well aware that others aren't going to like what he is doing and saying. But he's willing to let people be disappointed in the short term. He foregoes keeping the peace in the moment because he is focused on working toward a greater, more holistic shalom in which everyone can thrive, not just a few. Jesus is staying focused on the bigger picture of what he is called to do. And that's more important to him than how others feel about him or what they might think of him. Throughout the Gospels, Jesus models for us how not to let our decisions and actions be dictated by what others think. But it's hard. This is really hard to do for many of us. We have trouble overcoming all of those fears and anxieties and insecurities that we've lived with. Proverbs 29, verse 25, warns us that the fear of others lays a snare, but one who trusts in the Lord is secure. I really appreciate the wording here because it paints a powerful picture for us. If we are afraid of people, if we are afraid of what they think about us, what they might say about us, it will entrap us. We will not be free to be ourselves, to honestly express what we think and feel, to pursue the purposes that God has called us to. Instead, we will be chained to the perspectives and expectations of others. Perspectives and expectations that are often skewed, unhealthy, or just plain wrong. True security and freedom are found in trusting in God. If we are following Jesus, we need to remember that our identity is not in what others think of us. Our identity is in Christ. He's already accepted us and called us his friends. He's called us to a greater purpose than what other people are telling us that we should be doing. If we truly have this confidence and this knowledge, we can begin to let go of our fears and insecurities because we are secure in the ultimate and eternal foundation of God's love. The Apostle Paul clearly lays out the choice we have in Galatians 1:10. He says, am I now seeking human approval or God's approval? Or am I trying to please people? If I were still pleasing people, I would not be a servant of Christ. If you're like me and you're a consummate people pleaser, you're probably thinking, well, surely I can please both God and people, right? But Paul says this isn't really possible. When we prioritize seeking the approval of people, we are not focused on pleasing God. We've lost sight of what's most important. So, where do we begin if we want to choose the path of seeking God's approval rather than the approval of people? While people pleasing may come in many shapes and forms, I want to propose two specific areas that we can begin to look at to try to free ourselves from the burden of needing to please others. The first is to set healthy boundaries, including saying no when appropriate. People pleasing is an endless treadmill. There will always be more people who ask more of you, who want something else from you, who are dissatisfied with you. This is how the brokenness of others can weigh us down and harm us. And at some point, we just have to say no more. And here's another way of looking at it. If we take on responsibilities or emotional burdens that are not ours to bear, we will not have the capacity to say yes to the truly important things. Imagine if Jesus was an obsessive people pleaser who couldn't say no and who was always trying to make people happy. I did a really quick brainstorm of all of the things that Jesus would not have done. And this is just a very preliminary list. But he would not have called a ragtag bunch of seminary rejects to be his disciples. He wouldn't have interacted with women. He wouldn't have touched and healed lepers or other unclean people. He wouldn't have spoken out against religious leaders who are misguiding God's people. He wouldn't have preached about justice for the oppressed and hope for the poor. He wouldn't have gone willingly to the cross. And there are so many more things that we could add to this list. If Jesus had allowed himself to be buffeted around by the whims and desires of others, he would have lived an entirely different life, and he would not have fulfilled his purpose to save and redeem all of humanity. Thankfully for all of us, Jesus knew exactly who he was. He knew what he was responsible for, what he needed to do, what was good and right. And that mattered more to him than the criticism or disappointment of others. While none of us are Jesus, I do believe that every single one of us has been created by God to be wonderfully unique, with unique gifts that we should bring to bear into the world in unique ways. But we cannot fulfill this purpose, let alone even know what it is, if we are too busy listening to what everyone else says we should be doing. Author Adrienne Marie Brown puts it beautifully. She says, "Your no makes the way for your yes. Boundaries create the container within which your yes is authentic." We say no to the things that are less important or that are not our calling, so we have the space and the energy to say yes to the things that really matter, the things that God has especially gifted us for and that we were put on this earth to do. Here's the second area where we can begin to free ourselves from people-pleasing: learning to say the hard but important things, even when they're unpopular. In Ephesians chapter 4, Paul writes, "We must no longer be children, tossed to and fro and blown about by every wind of doctrine, by people's trickery, by their craftiness and deceitful scheming, but speaking the truth in love, we must grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ." In this letter to the church at Ephesus, Paul is practicing what he's preaching right here in the text. I can't imagine that anybody at that church was particularly happy with being called a child who is easily confused and deceived by the schemes and lies of others. But Paul is trying to speak the truth in love to them. He wants them to be firm in their faith, to know who God is, and to know who they are. He says this to them in chapter 4, which is more than halfway through his letter. So prior to this specific passage, Paul has already written 69 verses worth of affection, affirmation, encouragement, teaching, and guidance. There can be no doubt of his deep love for his brothers and sisters at Ephesus. It's abundantly clear that he wants them to thrive as individuals and as a community. To be the people of Christ, we need to speak the truth of Christ. In love. That's the operative word here. Everything must be done in love. I'm sure we all know people who are wonderfully honest and direct without the love. And that usually does not go over too well, right? It's very different, though, if there's someone you know and you know that they deeply care about you, they want the best for you, and also they have some hard truths to tell you. Still not easy to hear, but we know that it is meant for our flourishing. Of course, having permission to say hard things to people doesn't mean that we willy-nilly throw truth bombs left and right, never mind the consequences. No, the decision to speak up is something we approach with wisdom, discernment, and care. We need to be honest with ourselves about our intentions in this situation and ensure that we are not speaking out of anger or malice or judgment or selfishness. Here are some questions that I find helpful to ask myself if I'm considering speaking up. Is it true? Is it important? Is it for their good? And am I speaking out of love? Consider, for example, if you had a friend who was making poor choices that were hurting him and those around him. Or maybe a family member who's prioritizing her career and her work at the expense of her own health or her family. Maybe you have a loved one who's so fixated on the ways that others have wronged them that they are unable to see the ways in which they themselves have contributed to the problem. Which is the more loving approach? To stay silent? Listen, maybe offer encouragement, and then see our loved ones continue in their destructive behavior? Or do we speak out and say the hard truth to them out of love, in hopes that they can be transformed into healthier, more joyful, and more mature individuals? Speaking out is going to make people unhappy sometimes. It may lead to some very uncomfortable interactions. And there may be times when the other person completely rejects what we have to say, and it seems like nothing changes. But that's where healthy boundaries come in. Our responsibility is to speak the important truth in a genuinely loving way, but we are not responsible for the other person's reactions and choices. Saying hard but important truths may disrupt the peace in the short term. But I do believe it opens the door for the possibility of a greater, longer-lasting shalom, built upon a love that is willing to take risks for the sake of others. So, we set healthy boundaries, and we say the hard but important things. Of course, this is far easier said than done. I am decades into this journey, and I am still wrestling with people-pleasing. The work of Christian psychologists Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend has been incredibly helpful for me, especially their book, Boundaries. I highly recommend this if you haven't read it. They provide a simple framework for thinking about setting healthy boundaries, which is we are responsible to others and for ourselves. What do they mean by this? Being responsible to others means that we care for others and we respect them, including their boundaries, but we are not responsible for fixing them or controlling their choices or feelings. And we're responsible for ourselves. We establish our own boundaries that we need, and we take ownership of our choices, our feelings, and our actions. This is really well articulated in Galatians 6. Beginning in verse 2, Paul writes, "Share one another's burdens, and so complete Christ's law." If you think you are too good for that, you are badly deceived. Make a careful exploration of who you are and the work you have been given, and then sink yourself into that. Don't be impressed with yourself. Don't compare yourself with others. Each of you must take responsibility for doing the creative best you can with your own life. Be very sure now, you who have been trained to a self-sufficient maturity, that you enter into a generous common life with those who have trained you, sharing all the good things that you have and experience. Verse 2 tells us how essential it is to share one another's burdens. The word burdens here is translated from the Greek baros, which means a heavy weight, a hardship, literally a boulder. We should share one another's burdens when the weight is far too great for one individual to bear. We should be there for one another in those times. This is what it means to be the family of God, to love one another through the most difficult seasons in life. But we each also need to take responsibility for our own lives. We need to know who we are and the work that has been given to us, and we need to do our best in that. We are not responsible, however, for the work that's been given to others. And in fact, if we keep doing for others what they should be doing for themselves, or we allow them to continue engaging in harmful behavior, we are keeping them from working toward the self-sufficient maturity that Paul talks about. We are responsible to others and for ourselves. We care for and respect others without taking ownership of their choices and behaviors. We honor our own boundaries and take responsibility for our own choices and emotions. And the hope is that if all of us can practice this, then we will be a community that is mature and healthy. We will mutually be able to honor one another's boundaries. We will be okay if others say no, or if they tell us some hard but important truths. Now, because our people-pleasing tendencies can kind of ebb and flow over time, I think it's helpful for us to check in with ourselves every once in a while, see how we're doing in this area. So in a moment on the screen, there's going to be a short quiz that I found that we can take together. Obviously, this is not a replacement for seeking professional help if you need that, talking to a psychologist or therapist, but it at least gives us a starting point for getting a sense of where we're at when it comes to people-pleasing. So these are 5 quick yes or no questions. Do not overthink them. Just go with the answer that comes to your mind first, all right? So, number 1, do you frequently say yes to requests, even when you really want to say no? 2, do you agree with others or hide your true opinions just to keep the peace? 3, do you feel intensely guilty when you disappoint someone or fail to meet their expectations? 4, do you jump in to solve other people's problems, even if it drains your own energy? 5, do you seek validation and worry about what others think of you after a conversation? All right, got your responses? If you said yes to 3 or more of these questions, then I would like to say to you, welcome to the club, my friend. There are many of us here. You are not alone. It is not an easy journey to overcome our people-pleasing tendencies. But God's grace is more than sufficient for each of us. And God's love grounds us in a strong, secure foundation in which we do not have to be driven by our fears and insecurities. In a moment, there are going to be a few reflection questions that come up on the screen that you can spend time thinking about on your own or processing with a friend. But before we enter the time of reflection, I just wanted to spend a moment meditating on this passage from Psalm 139 that we've been revisiting throughout this series. If you're comfortable, maybe you can close your eyes and listen as I read this. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. See if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Let me close us with a short prayer, and then we'll spend some time reflecting. God, thank you for your eternal, unshakable love for each and every one of us. Help us to remember that you have already accepted us. There is nothing we need to prove. That you have given us a spirit of, not a spirit of fear, but a spirit of power and love. Strengthen us to grow in self-sufficient maturity that honors you and others and ourselves. In Jesus' name, amen.